Welcome back to the 2 a.m. Book Review Club, where we stay up late talking about books or talk about books that made us stay up late. March is finally over, and I am here to do a monthly wrap-up to talk about all of the books I read in March. In March, I read 18 books, which is a lot, but since I've already talked about 10 of those books on the podcast during my Mystery Marathon March mini-series, I'm just going to really quickly run through the 10 books I've already talked about and give you a mini-review for each of them. If you want in-depth thoughts on any of these books, then feel free to check out the Mystery Marathon March episodes. But like I said, I have already talked about all of these books at length, and I don't really feel like doing that again. So here are the 10 books I have already talked about on the show, along with a bite-sized review for each. Book number one, The Writing Retreat by Julia Bartz. Five writers, a sinister mansion, and a tangled web of secrets and lies. Sounds like fun. And it is, but you have to be okay with nothing actually happening until the book is halfway over, at which point everything goes completely off the rails. It's a fun thriller, but ultimately it didn't have anything new to say, and I enjoyed it for what it was. Book number two, The Violin Conspiracy by Brendan Slocum. This book is a mystery. It's a coming-of-age story. It made me laugh. It made me tear up. I loved it. It is an incredible book. And if you like both classical music and mystery books, then I personally think that you definitely, definitely need to add this book to your TBR. Book number three, Just the Nicest Couple by Mary Kubica. I can sum this one up for you in six words. It was a waste of time. Book number four, Everyone on This Train is a Suspect by Benjamin Stevenson. This is the sequel to the incredibly popular first book, Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone, and not only did I enjoy the sequel more, I also just thought it was a better book. It was fun, it was funny, it had a group of writers who all low-key or high-key hated each other, and I had a really great time. Book number five, All the Sinners Bleed by S.A. Cosby. This book is dark, it's heavy, and it's much less of a standard thriller and much more of an exploration of crime itself. It has every trigger warning you can think of and a few you probably won't think of, but for me personally, it was worth it. Book number six, Black Rabbit Hall by Eve Chase. This is a gothic-esque dual timeline family drama that had some aspects I appreciated, but ultimately it was predictable and it didn't have anything really that interesting to say. Book number eight, The Marlowe Murder Club by Robert Thorogood. The audiobook was enjoyable. The characters were not. The mystery is clever, but I think I'm a bit burned out on quirky characters for the time being because it is too often shorthand for annoying. Book number 9, We Were Liars by E. Lockhart. This is a divisive YA mystery that is a bit pretentious, a bit shallow, and a whole lot distinctive when it comes to the writing style. You either love it or you hate it, and while I enjoyed it, I can definitely see why other people would not. Did I miscount? Because that was only 9 books. Anyway, so those are the books I've already talked about, and like I said, if you want in-depth reviews for any of these, please check out the Mystery Marathon March miniseries. And now, let's talk about the other 8 books, which I have not talked about on the podcast before. This was a month of sequels for me. And the first sequel I read this month was Ruthless Vows by Rebecca Ross. I read Divine Rivals in the fall, and that cliffhanger at the end definitely propelled me to pick up the sequel as quickly as possible, aka whenever my library hold finally came through. My library hold did finally come through, and having read Ruthless Vows, I think I'm coming away from it with similar feelings that I had after reading Divine Rivals, except maybe a tiny bit less excited. In case you haven't read Divine Rivals, it's the story of Iris and Roman, rival reporters who are competing for the same newspaper position amid the chaos of a war that is happening between rival gods, hence the title Divine Rivals. Divine Rivals is a fantasy romance, and predictably enough, the romance is what I enjoyed most about this book. I'm always a sucker for a class difference romance, the rich boy and the struggling girl. And when you throw in a fantasy World War I aesthetic, enchanted typewriters, and mistaken slash hidden identities, then of course I'm going to have a good time. With Ruthless Vows, given the ending of Divine Rivals, I was kind of expecting an angsty reset, a second chance adjacent romance, but while that's kind of what happens, I would say that Ruthless Vows is much more of a straightforward action adventure, rescue slash rescuer wartime story. The central narrative question for most of Ruthless Vows is not how do these characters feel about each other, but rather how are these characters going to get out of this situation alive. There's a lot more world building in the sequel, and the war in particular is given more depth beyond two opposing forces are fighting for some nebulous reason. The magic system is fleshed out, the villain is given a face and a personality, and all of this is great. It really boosts the fantasy aspect of this duology. The problem, I guess, is just that it's not really what I was here for. The only emotional investment I had in this series in the first place was Iris and Roman's relationship. And once that gets resolved, I discovered that I didn't actually care about the fate of this fantasy world or whatever. I like fantasy, I like romance, but when I specifically reach for a fantasy romance book, I really am here for the romance first and the fantasy second. Overall, I really liked Divine Rivals. I liked Ruthless Vows. But at this point, I do feel like I'm done with this world, this series, these characters, and I'm just ready to move on to something else. The second sequel I read this month was The Ballad of Never After by Stephanie Garber. I read Once Upon a Broken Heart, the first book, in January, I believe, and here is how I would describe that book. Imagine you walk into a candy shop and you find the sweetest, fluffiest, pinkest candy in the entire shop, and you buy a big bag of it and you take it home and you eat the entire thing in one sitting. That is what reading Once Upon a Broken Heart felt like, because it's all fairy tales and true love and princes and princesses and pink hair and pink dresses and delicious food and gossip. And I'll be honest here, I had no emotional investment in anything that was happening. But I picked up the sequel, The Ballad of Never After, because I just wanted that same feeling of reading a sugar-coated, fairy tale-esque fantasy romance. And actually, I was pleasantly surprised by The Ballad of Never After because I started to feel some level of emotional investment in the characters and in the romance, which was not what I was expecting. Our protagonist, Evangeline, felt like she grew up a tiny bit between books. The push and pull between her and her love interest, Jax, was a lot of fun, and I just had a really great time. It's still that overly saccharine, pink-colored candy, but now it made me feel something. And I know the natural decision would be to read the third and last book that just came out, A Curse for True Love, but I've been seeing mixed reviews for that book, and honestly, I don't really feel the need to read it. I got my emotional closure with The Ballad of Never After as far as how the characters feel about each other. And like with Ruthless Fowls, I do feel like I got what I wanted out of this series and I'm ready to move on. The third and final sequel I read this month was He Who Drowned the World by Shelley Parker Chan. This was a month of fantasy for me for some reason. And oh my gosh, I cannot express how much I was blown away by this book. I read the first book, She Who Became the Sun, at the beginning of 2023. I think it might have been the first book I read last year, and I really enjoyed it, largely because it was the first epic fantasy I had read in a while. She Who Became the Sun is a fantasy inspired by Chinese history and Chinese mythology. And in particular, it's inspired by how much of Chinese history is taken up by various factions fighting with each other in order to claim the mandate of heaven, i.e., to claim that they and they alone are the rightful rulers. In She Who Became the Sun, we have a young girl who is, above all, determined to survive. And this imperative drives her to eventually enter the fight for the throne. But no matter where she goes or who she becomes, she is always, always characterized, above all, by her single-minded pursuit of her goal and her willingness to do whatever it takes to reach that goal. Like I said, I enjoyed She Who Became the Sun. I thought it was very well crafted and very grounded in its cultural context, which I always enjoy. But what I most remember about it are the action set pieces, the political maneuvering, more surface level type things. But then I read the sequel, He Who Drowned the World, and I was so impressed by the psychological depth of the characters, the empathy with which the author explored even the most disturbing people. There are good people and truly terrible people, but their shared humanity is always first and foremost in the narrative. I also thought that the writing was an improvement over the first book. There were so many quotes that I highlighted because the writing was just so impactful. Like I said, I have a lot of favorite quotes from this book, but for the sake of time, I'll limit myself to just one. "The sky above the cedars was the color of despair. It was too early for stars. Without the river of heaven as a ceiling, he had the stomach-turning feeling of his gaze falling upwards into emptiness. There was nothing to catch on to. There was nothing to stop him from falling forever." So, those are my thoughts on He Who Drowned the World. Definitely one of my favorite books that I read in March, and one of my favorite books that I've read so far this year. Since I just talked about a book I really enjoyed, I'm now going to talk about a book that was kind of disappointing, and that book is People We Meet on Vacation by Emily Henry. I have now read every Emily Henry romance, minus the one that is either just released or coming out soon. So I've read Beach Read, Book Lovers, Happy Place, and now People We Meet on Vacation. And I enjoyed all of the previous books that I read. Unfortunately, the exception seems to be People We Meet on Vacation. This book is about Alex and Poppy, best friends who go on vacation every year until one year when everything blows up. 2 years pass, it turns out that they really miss each other, and they decide to take one last vacation to see if they can patch things up or if they just have to accept that maybe they don't work together anymore. Their friendship is over. There's a lot of classic Emily Henry rom-com hallmarks here. Witty banter, thoughtful observations on love and life, quirky situations, and usually those elements really work for me. But in this case, these elements just didn't come together in a way that worked for me. I could point to specific things. For example, Poppy going on and on and on about how terribly she was bullied in school because she and her family are nebulously, vaguely, kind of strange, I guess, which grated on me after a while. Or, for example, how boring I found Alex, the strong and silent love interest, to be. But overall, I don't think it's anything specific that's at fault here. This particular book just didn't work for me as the reader that I am, and that's fine. I still like Emily Henry as an author. I'll still read her books. I still really love Happy Place, which is my favorite Emily Henry book of all time, but I just didn't enjoy People We Meet on Vacation, and that's fine. All right, four more books to go, and then we're done. I've got two literary titles and two historical titles, and it's a toss-up. We could talk about either of these first, but for no particular reason, let's start with the literary titles. Literary title number one is The Ensemble by, oops, I should have looked up the pronunciation, Aja Gabel. I'm so sorry if I messed that up. You know the kind of sad girl literary fiction where everyone is vaguely depressed, but not enough to actually do anything about it? And you get chapter after chapter of slice of life moments, and you feel like nothing is actually happening or going to happen until you get to the end of the book and somehow the characters have ended up in a completely different place than they were at the beginning of the book. You know, the kind kind of literary fiction where 20-year-olds sound like 40-year-olds, and every interaction between the characters is psychoanalyzed to death. That is the kind of literary fiction that The Ensemble is, and sometimes that kind of literary fiction really works for me when I have those sad girl moments where I just want to wallow in the emotions and miseries of imaginary people. The Ensemble is the story of a classical music ensemble, a string quartet, composed of four young musicians who we follow from their rocky student beginnings to middle age. And it had interesting things to say about art and life and ambition and the complexities of human relationships. I loved the characters. I hated the characters. I related to the characters in ways that I did not want to relate to these characters. I felt like I knew them better than my real life friends. And I also was grateful for that because people are not meant to know each other that well. Basically, if you're looking for a Sally Rooney-esque book that is a lot less intense and that takes place in the world of classical music, then I would recommend picking up The Ensemble. Literary title number two is The Dinner by Herman Koch. Like the title suggests, The Dinner takes place over the course of a single night out at a restaurant. Two couples meet up to talk about their children. Secrets are revealed. People are exposed. And you'll be left completely shocked by where this story goes. It's an incredibly divisive book. A lot of people hate it. And I can understand why, but personally, I enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed this book. I love unlikable, downright despicable characters. I love getting inside a warped and twisted mind and seeing how it works. And I especially love the discomfort, the visceral discomfort of that moment when you realize that you understand, that you relate to how that terrible person thinks or feels. I also love that this is not an American book and that this takes place in a society that is so different from American society and that has very different concerns, and that we get social commentary that is refreshingly different from the kind of social commentary I normally read about. There are definitely reasons why this book is polarizing, and that's why I can't wholeheartedly recommend it to everyone, but personally, for me, I really enjoyed The Dinner. And now, let's close out this episode with the two historical titles that I read in March. Historical title number one is a historical fiction title that I have been meaning to read forever, and that book is The Nightingale by Kristen Hanna. The Nightingale takes place in France during World War II, so yes, it is that kind of book. It features two sisters who have been estranged for years and who are each dealing with the war in very different ways. And it's above all a very sad book. Like many Kristen Hanna books, it's incredibly readable, but that also means you're being propelled very quickly through all of these horrific events that are all the more horrific because they are rooted in historical fact. I will say that if you read a lot of World War II fiction, as I do, this book will feel familiar, but that's also kind of unfair because The Nightingale was the book, or at least a book, that inspired so many other authors to write World War II fiction. The other historical title I read in March is actually historical nonfiction, Walter Isaacson's biography of Leonardo da Vinci. I listened to the audiobook, and not only was the audiobook really well done, in my opinion, But the book itself was just so eye-opening. Not only did I discover that there was a lot about Leonardo da Vinci I apparently didn't know, but also his approach to the world was so unique and really the thing that Walter Isaacson kept emphasizing throughout the book. There is so much emphasis placed on the importance of being curious, of making connections between seemingly unimportant things, of documenting your thoughts and your thought processes, of continuing to study and learn and grow intellectually throughout your entire life. I honestly think this book might have changed the way I view the world permanently, and the way I approach the world. And how often can you say that about a book? Definitely not often enough. And I would highly recommend this book to everyone. Even if you don't read nonfiction, even if you don't read biographies, I think it is worth it. So that is Leonardo da Vinci by Walter Isaacson. And those are all of the books I read in March. That is also going to be everything for this episode. This has been the 2 a.m. Book Review Club. Thanks so much for joining me, and I will be back next week at 2 a.m. Until then, have a great week and happy book travels.